Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the VeloCast. Spain brought its scenery A-game this afternoon as the peloton raced through the 163.5 kilometres from Marbella to Caminito del Rey. However, in the run-in to what would be fair to describe as a punchy rather than brutal climb, some very, very big names appeared to have left their racing A-game on the bedside cabinet back at the team hotel. From world champion Peter Sagan to red jersey wearer Rohan Dennis and pre-race GC favourites such as Richie Port, all suffering with the heat and the pace. A much happier atmosphere is surely to be found on the Movistar and Team Sky buses as Alejandro Valverde took the win today, while Mikel Kwiatkowski moved into the race leader's red jersey.
Let's just take a moment to remember that the organisers of the Vuelta designated today as a flat stage.
I really would love a pint of what they clearly had. When
a flat stage.
We can only go with it was a typo on the website, surely, because that was anything but flat. As I said in the little kind of catch-up post the results and nothing but the results show yesterday, today's stage to Caminito del Rey wasn't the one where we saw Esteban Chavez win in 2015. It was the much easier side of the climb, but take nothing away from what we saw today. It was a cracking finish.
Yeah, and I mean, when I looked at the route for the preview, I thought we would see quite a lot of changes in GC over the first week, but I thought we might have to wait until the start of the second week to see some really, really big shifts. But there are people who have had Vuelta hope ending times today. You know, guys who we expected to be up there. I think, you know, you picked Richie Port as your potential winner. I thought he might be the one to make a difference compared to the other climbers in the time trial. He's essentially gone. Rohan Dennis, who before the stage said he thought he would, you know, see what happened and try and keep the jersey, he's gone. I mean, BMC's race is essentially in tatters now. They have to look to be sniping for stage wins. However, some teams, I think, came out of it really well. Compared to the slightly shambolic movie star that we saw at the Tour, they look like a force to be reckoned with in their home race now, with both Nairo Quintana looking strong enough to drift to the front and have a look, and Alejandro Valverde, you know, just making a mockery of his 123 years. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful racing from him. Whatever you think about his past, whatever you think about, you know, what he's done and whatever your suspicions are now, and I've seen it all over social media since this win, you've got to say his brain is as much an asset as his legs. You could see him looking at his opponents today, assessing their condition as, you know, that race reached its climax in the last kilometre and a half, and working out exactly what to do. And even though we saw some other strong riders up there with him, as soon as he got near the front, I think it was fairly obvious he was going to take the victory. A great win from Valverde, but some really shocking time losses for some other people.
Well, let's look at some of those time losses before we dissect exactly what happened to bring Alejandro Valverde yet another win at the Vuelta.
Is it his 10th?
I think it might be, yeah. You could be right there. You mentioned Rohan Dennis looking to perhaps keep the jersey that he took so well yesterday in the opening time trial. But with 16 kilometres to go, he was dropped. Then we heard news that Richie Port was also in that red jersey group. And very, very quickly, a massive gap opened up. I mean, we're looking at some of the cycling websites at the minute and pro cycling stats, those kind of things, trying to get some measure of just how much time has been lost. Last time I refreshed the page, Andre Amador, himself a GC favourite, was listed as the last man over the line 6.5 minutes down, and still no sign of Richie Port. Do you think we should be offering Richie a job as a podcaster? Because I don't think this whole pro cycling thing's working out for him so much.
I think what we saw today is that, you know, I'm always sceptical of riders who claim to be ill. I've got years of scepticism on, you know, virtual tape about, you know, riders claiming to be ill. I think what is clear today is that Peter Sagan is still suffering the effects of that crash and of the illness that saw him finish. in fact, not finish the European roads in Glasgow and only manage, I think, 10th place in Hamburg. The course today was too hot. We saw him taking, you know, for Sagan, we saw him taking bottles down his back, giving himself showers from bidons that were handed up to him. And he just didn't look the rider that we're used to seeing. At his best, I think Sagan would definitely been up there with a shout today. It's the kind of route that might have suited him perfectly. Richie Port, I think less coming back from his injury, because a broken collarbone, although it's hideously painful, is actually relatively easy to fix. He would have been back on the home trainer very soon and motivated to do well in this Vuelta. But that gastroenteritis, you know, the problem he had with his stomach where he wasn't able to attend the team presentation, you know, just not well at all, has clearly sapped him. He's lost a point where, an amount of time where, I'd actually seriously consider, if I was Richie Port, picking a couple of stages to try and peak for the Worlds, and after that just buggering off home. You know, there's no point him being here to challenge for GC. But we also saw some quite significant losses from some other people. You know, Dan Martin, who looked really strong today compared to a completely anonymous for me, Fabio Aru. We had that discussion just when we chatted the last time. He lost well over a minute and 15. Elner Zakarin's lost a minute. And that's before we get to the serious stuff. I mean, I'm going back to the fact that this was designated flat, which was clearly ridiculous from the Vuelta organisers, but actually reflects the fact that as a stage, we maybe should have seen a handful of seconds lost for GC guys in the finale, but these losses are big mountain losses. I'm literally gobsmacked. I'm not even sure where to start with where this leaves the GC, and we're only on stage two.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch as time gaps opened up, and as I say, we're still looking for exact confirmation on how far certain GC guys are down today. I mean, to Richie Port, you're quite right to highlight the hiding your form under a bushel tactic of say, oh, I'm not well, I'm ill, I can't, you know, can't hardly turn a pedal, and then surprise your rivals. But I can't remember a situation where a rider has missed the team presentation.
I've just checked, actually. Port came in 13 minutes, 31 seconds.
Oh, my goodness. That is a phenomenal amount of time to toss.
That's right beside Adam Yates.
Which is another rider. I mean, yes, I think you highlighted that Simon would be the designated Yates twin to be leading the team, but a collapse of 13 minutes from his brother is another shocker. I mean, at least Richie Port was
again in the same group.
At least Richie Port was signposted somewhat, as I say, by missing the team presentation ceremony and not performing very well in the time trial yesterday. So, I mean, I can only imagine that it is just the heat and the severity of the pace that's done for a lot of guys outside of the illnesses. I mean, you talked there a bit about Petter Sagan and how he looked to be suffering throughout. I did question the wisdom of him going to Glasgow, a place which, as you and I know, has as many words for rain as the Eskimos have for snow, before subsequently going to a Grand Tour which started as far south in Spain as was geographically possible. And if there's any way of looking at how that's a bad idea, we can see it writ large in what Petter Sagan was doing this afternoon, throwing bottle bidons over his head to try and cool down. He just looked to be overheating to a really frightening degree. But I'm with you, John. I'm absolutely gobsmacked by what happened in terms of GC on what should have been a relatively calm day today. I mean, we were looking at riders as stage favourites like Kwiatkowski and Valverde, fair enough, but not the carnage that then caused in the general classification. Although, having said that, when the gap started to open up to actual GC rivals, it did seem to be that Movistar and Sky were trying to outdo each other as to who could set the hardest tempo on the front. They were sniping at each other, going, no, that's clearly not hard enough, I'm sending a rider up. No, you're not going hard enough, I'm going to put my rider up at the front. I mean, it was a cracking end to the stage, but a really, really perplexing one, if nothing else.
Before we go any further, actually, I want to apologise to Fabio Aru, who managed to finish in the group that was only 8 seconds back. I just missed him. So, Fabio, you have my apologies. You've done a good job on the first day on the flat. I think we've got a much reduced group of people now who could potentially look at the victory in 3 weeks in Madrid. You know, we talked at length about maybe, what, 15 possible contenders in the preview show, and I had a list of a whole bunch of others. I think we've whittled that down really fast already, and we're going to get more surprises if this race carries on. You know, tomorrow might look like a breakaway stage, but there's some big climbs, and if the heat attacks them again, then, you know, you could see somebody suffer. But a lot of guys who I thought would be in at the death when they get into the last weekend are just gone now. You know, there's no way that you can look at a 13.5 minute gap and think, oh, I can make that up, it's fine. You know, they're just gone. They're not part of the race anymore. And for us, it simplifies matters. You know, we're now looking at definitely the Simon of the Yates brothers is the one who's going to be their GC guy, and Adam will just have to work as a domestique. We can more or less rule, I think, BMC entirely out of the equation for an overall victory. You know, we don't have to regard them as a threat when we're thinking about tactical options. For Bora Hansgrohe, I think they did a pretty good performance today, but I was wondering why they were working so hard. But they had people up there like, you know, Manny Buchmann, who finished in seventh place. But other people who maybe for me were second-tier favourites when we were doing the preview show, people like Rigoberto Urán, are now four square at the front of the race. You know, I'm coming back to the fact we're only at stage two, for God's sake. And we're talking as if we're, you know, sort of halfway through the middle week of a Grand Tour. This is going to be absolute carnage for the next 3 weeks.
Unless, of course, the peloton decides collectively this is insane. We can't possibly keep this up. Everybody calm down for a few days and let's see what happens. But you're right. A lot of big names really ruled out this afternoon. Before we get to discussing just how Alejandro Valverde took the win, we should probably mention the day's break, which actually had some good names in it.
Thomas De Gendt,
I was about to say, the most breakaway of all, Thomas De Gendt, who wisely, I think, dropped back to the peloton with still 56 kilometres remaining on the day, sensing that the break was never going to make it, and he was absolutely right. But also with him in that break was Alexis Goujard from Agir d'Auxerre. We had Pierre Roland from EF Drapac, Pablo Torres from Burgos BH, Jonathan Lastras from Caja Rural, Luis Angel Matty from Cofidis, and Hector Saez from Euskadi Murias. With 32 kilometres to go, Goujard attacked with Pierre Roland, and the two of them managed to stay together for a few kilometres, but as last man left standing, Pierre Roland was eventually caught with just under 20 kilometres to go. And it was really not long after that point that ding-dong battle between Movistar and Sky played out on the road as both the pace and the gradient ramped upwards. We did see a valiant effort by Quickstep's Laurens De Plus, but given that the chasing peloton were looking at each other and had decided that whoever was first to attack would also catch the Quickstep man, they weren't really concerned overly with the fact that he'd managed to get away inside the Flamme Rouge.
No, and when the person who went after him finally went at just the right point, of course it was Alejandro Valverde, with Mikel Kwiatkowski hard on his wheel. You know, he knew that Valverde was the man to watch. And I've got to say that Kwiatkowski didn't put a pedal wrong. You know, he held the right wheel, he jumped at the right time, he took an absolutely sublime line through that final corner to put himself in the best possible position for a win. But Valverde was just too strong on the day. And I think for Valverde, he's still in that domestique role in Movistar, because I think even this early, and I keep going on at people to not make prognostications based on really early happenings in a stage, but I think we saw such carnage in the rest of the peloton today that we can maybe take some hints of form. I thought Nairo Quintana looked more like the Nairo Quintana that we want to see as opposed to the one we've seen in decent years. So he was up there 3 seconds back in ninth place. But Valverde, he just looked like, Nibali's nickname's the shark, but Valverde actually looked like a shark. You know, he just looked like he would do whatever he needed to do to cross that line first, and nobody else could do anything about it. Now, Kwiatkowski takes the leader's jersey. And I think Team Sky today, for all that you, me, old Uncle Tom Cobley and all have said, oh, you know, it's not the kind of team that they take to the tour. We won't see the kind of dominance. It was business as usual. You know, we saw Jonathan Castroviejo do a turn in the front. It was the work of four men. And when the riders did pull off, you know, as we saw the Sky riders get to the end of their tether and pull off, they were completely spent. So they were clearly dedicated to Mikel. But also, if you look just a wee bit behind, then Team Sky with David de la Cruz, who I think might be a better choice for the overall when we finally get to Madrid, is only 17th. He was only 8 seconds back. So for all that work, both Movistar, who worked a huge turn, as you said, and Team Sky, it's played off for them. Their tactics in that final climb got both of their riders, who might be in with a chance of the overall once the race kind of plays out, in a position that's really strong and actually genuinely put the sword to some of the other people who might be considered their rivals. So I think we saw great tactics from both of those teams today. And you look at Lotto NL Jumbo. They've got George Bennett up there in fifth position today. Stephen Kreuzweg is in the same group as David de la Cruz. So, you know, it's worked too well for all three of those teams. So, although we saw some collapses today, I think we saw some clever riding that's put people just where they need to be.
You said that Kwiatkowski didn't put a pedal wrong. I was thinking perhaps he was somewhat naive to kick and go to the front and give Valverde his wheel, but I suppose you could also say that he could be forgiven for thinking he'd be able to hold off a guy 10 years his senior, but it is Alejandro Valverde we're talking about.
And also, frankly, if he'd forced Valverde to the front, Valverde would just have beaten him from there today.
Very probably, yeah. So stage result for this afternoon, Alejandro Valverde takes the win ahead of Mikel Kwiatkowski. Just 3 seconds back was Laurens De Ploes. In fourth place, Wilco Kelderman. In fifth, George Bennett. In sixth place, Tony Galopin. In seventh, Emmanuel Buchmann. In eighth place was Rigoberto Urán. In ninth was Nairo Quintana. And rounding out the day's top 10 was Thibaut Pinot. Mikel Kwiatkowski moves into the race leader's red jersey, now 14 seconds ahead of second place Alejandro Valverde. Wilco Kelderman sits in third at 25 seconds. Laurens De Ploes is in fourth at 28 seconds. At 30 seconds is fifth place Ion Izaguirre and sixth place Fabio Fellini. In seventh at 32 seconds is Emmanuel Buchmann. Eighth place Tony Galopin at 33 seconds, along with ninth place Nairo Quintana. Rounding out the GC top 10 is Bauke Mollema at 35 seconds. If the unwary were to open a map ahead of tomorrow's Stage 3, they could be hoodwinked into thinking they were looking at the sport's shortest ever road stage. On paper, the towns of Mijas and Alhauran de la Torre are only 15 kilometres away from each other. However, the organisers have decided on a much more scenic route over 178.2 kilometres and have thrown in an early first cat climb away from the coast. Indeed, the vast majority of the day is made up of either climbing or descending before giving way to a false flat run-in which begins at 161 kilometres gone.
Tomorrow's outcome depends entirely on how the peloton race it. Now, that sounds like a stupid thing to say, because every day depends on how the peloton race it. But with that first cat climb starting at, what, about 23k into the race, all hell is going to break loose trying to form a break. And that may define the day. If you get the right mixture of riders in the break, they might be able to stay away. Because as you say, there's not a bit of flat road. It's first cat, and then there's a third cat climb, then a descent to an uncategorised climb with a sprint point at the top of it, I think.
As you do.
And then a descent with, as you say, a false flat into the finish. So if a breakaway with the right riders in it forms, who doesn't threaten anybody else, we could see it stick. But there are so few chances for fast guys who can climb a bit, like Elia Viviani, for example. Even to a certain extent, Lucas Postelberger, I think, from Bora, is the kind of rider who could do well tomorrow, that the peloton might shut down a break and go for one of the rare sprints that are on offer in this Vuelta. It's entirely dependent on the makeup of the break and also the weather. You know, if it's another brutally hot day, you may find the peloton after the extreme efforts of today sit up and let a break go. So I think it will probably end in a slightly reduced bunch sprint, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to see a 5 or 6 rider break decide the finish between them.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. And I would just throw in, probably another couple of names. In fact, the rider that I'm going to go for tomorrow is Matteo Trentin, of course, the recently crowned European road race champion from Glasgow. Mm. So clearly got good form. And tomorrow is the kind of day that I think would suit him. So yeah, that's who I'm going to go for. But you're right to mention the guys that you did, that it would absolutely suit them as well. Maybe even someone like Danny Van Poppel, being another one.
I mean, it's a cliche of the modern times, but there will be people on turbo trainers before the start, even if it's 32 degrees. Because once that climb is hit, if the brake hasn't formed already, all hell is going to break loose. And if you're not in a position to put out 100%, then you'll be history. You know, it's just going to be, the Vuelta is always mad. I've got a feeling that this one is going to be absolutely bonkers. And I thought that a couple of days ago when we did the preview, but seeing the way they raced that today, I'm even more confident we're going to every day be going, who the hell did that happen?
You're probably right. But thank you in the meantime for joining us today, and hope you can do so again tomorrow as John and myself look at exactly how Stage 3 of the 2018 Vuelta a España played out in the next edition of The VeloCast.